We have a quorum, and I'd like to call this meeting to order, please. Stephanie, would you please call the roll?
Astrid Bergson. Island Danovy. Susan Fowler. Dolores Henry.
Here.
Tom Moore. Judy O'Connor. Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Ann Robin. Deborah Townsend.
Thank you. Before we go further, I'd like to acknowledge that Sue is back with us. I'm glad to have you. Yeah, I'll bet. Thank you. Is there any public participation this afternoon? Nancy?
Am I good now? All right. I didn't wake up this morning planning to come, but I saw the memo about appropriate uses for local funding. And the biggest thing I wanted to address is the myth that the Affordable Care Act made everybody, or should make everybody, covered for health insurance or Medicaid. It was never designed to be 100% coverage, and so I looked up some stats. Well, I had just come off a long board meeting the night before, so when I saw it, I was thinking 7% of clients that might be uninsured was the number that Community Elements is currently experiencing. And that, to me, is a best-case scenario. Our experience for all programs has been 21% are uninsured in April, 20% uninsured, low-income and uninsured, in May, 21%, 21%, it's very small print, 23%. And finally, in October, the financials we looked at last night, we had 25.65% of the patients who got care with a promised program were low income and uninsured. And so I think I want to try to crack that myth, to change your idea that everybody is covered and everything is paid for. It's just not the reality we live in. So that's what our health center is doing. I also wanted to look, because I saw a couple weeks ago a real cool site, and it said in Champaign County in 2013, about 16% of the residents of Champaign County were uninsured for medical care. And they're estimating by the end of 2015 that 8% will be uninsured by this year's end for medical care. That's tremendous progress, to cut it from 16% to 8%. That's great news. But the 8% isn't 8% of our population. If we're a community health center and we're delivering care to the low income, regardless of ability to pay, we're not going to see 8%. The uninsured are going to tend to find our health center. So I expect that it'll be higher than the 8% that's predicted for 2015. So you guys have important things to think about and decide about your priorities for funding, but I felt it would be a disservice for you to do that thinking that people are covered and should be covered. One of the questions was, why are people not covered by Medicaid? We have about 2,000 people, and there's maybe others who might know more, but I have quick research today, about 2,000 people who are reported as undocumented and not eligible for Medicaid. And they're here, they're living here, and they're going to seek care somewhere. And they're not going to be eligible, they're going to be low income, they're not going to be eligible for Medicaid, and they're going to seek care at a place like Francis Nelson or Psychiatry Services at Community Elements. And so they're here in the community, and they're a big part of the uninsured population that we serve. Additionally, people, we notice with our uninsured population that our citizens, that they tend to be transient, that they tend to move. They're newly here from California, or they're down from Chicago. They come to us, they don't have coverage for the care that needs to be delivered, but we don't turn them away. And that's a big part of the uninsured population that we serve. And finally, and I think it maybe affects people who are pursuing who need services from psychiatry or other mental health services, is that there are people who are not compliant or are unable to complete the application. It's not easy. The reason we went from 20% uninsured back up to 25% uninsured in October is because that's when the first group of people went through redetermination and they failed to renew their Medicaid coverage. And so I suspect that that's going to be a big part of the people that we serve that are uninsured. So I just want to, you guys have lots to talk about, but I want to let you know that there are uninsured and there will be uninsured. And even best predictions are that there'll be 8% of the people in Champaign County will be uninsured.
Thank you, Nancy.
Can I ask you a question? Or is it not appropriate?
If it's a short one.
Yeah. So you're expecting that the expenses will go up substantially for Promise Healthcare or Francis Nelson or?
Expenses, I think we expect, I mean, our best case scenario is all programs together, about 20% of our patients are uninsured. We used to be at 50%. We never expect to be 100%. So I just feel like I've heard conversations and I've seen it talked about that you think, not you personally, that some people think everyone will be covered. So 1 in 5 patients, I'm not going to get reimbursement for. I don't have, aside from potentially the mental health board for mental health services, I don't have a pot of money that I can go and bill that care for.
Astrid?
Mm-hmm. Are the homeless eligible for Medicaid?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. It's very helpful, I guess. Other citizen input or? Okay, Dale?
Dale Morrissey, Developmental Services Center. I guess I'm giving you my monthly update on the state of the staff shortage around the whole state. I can give you a little bit on DSC, but particularly talk to you about statewide. I was asked this past month, well, actually I did it this week, but to serve on a phone conversation with Ronnie Cohen, who is the court monitor for the Ligas consent decree concerning this issue. Some interesting things, actually, even though it wasn't a group I normally belong in, but they'd heard some of the things that are going on here, for example, with our group home not being able to open because of the staff shortage. But some shocking things, and by the way, this is, many of the state associations have got together, they got together a couple weeks ago, and it has become the highest priority of 4 or 5 of these organizations to try to bring this forward. And, you know, who knows what the mark's going to be, but you know, at least striving for $15 an hour, which is currently reimbursement rates of 9-something an hour, of which some of us are, like DSC's, paying $11.05 an hour for that entry wage and have to make that up with other resources like our donated dollar. But some interesting things, there was an organization in Peoria, 37% of their direct service provider positions are vacant. You remember when Kim Zeller came and spoke with you a few months ago from Ray Graham? Of 250 DSPs, 64 of them are vacant. I was in another conversation with her. They had interviewed 754 people to fill their last 74 positions to find qualified applicants because there's not qualified applicants out there. Another organization in Southern Illinois had a 25% vacancy, and on and on and on. It's throughout the state. I think the most shocking thing to Ms. Cohen, and that was at the end, and somebody said, is anybody opening homes to meet the Ligas consent decree? And there was not one person on the phone conversation that's doing that because they can't staff it. So we're in a situation, we've got a lot of staff that are working a lot of overtime. So I guess in one sense you could say we're saving some money because we're not fully staffed, but we're burning people we do have. You know, you can only work so many weeks in a row, 40, 60, 70 hours. And that's happening throughout the state. There still is organizations. There were some on the phone yesterday that are collapsing their fours back into eights. There was one organization that was trying to downsize, had a plan to downsize their ICFs to CILAs. They put that completely on hold. And again, I was sad to tell them that we have a home that's been waiting there for 4 or 5 months, and many of you know that one of the families that mom's passed, she came to these meetings, and she's passed during this process while we're waiting. And so now dad's getting along until we can find a way to open, and that's not a pleasant experience. So I don't mean to bear bad news, but there is some movement now. And what we're trying to do statewide is to position the state to let them know what this issue is causing, the shortage is causing. So when a budget is finally negotiated, at least that's in a discussion. You know, everybody can say there's no money, But if individuals that are serving people with disabilities aren't at least in the mix, you're never going to get that rate up. And so that's the strategy we're taking, is when there is money and when things start to move, we need to be at the front door. We can't let people with disabilities be at the back door. So I know it's long, but I'm going to keep telling you, because you guys need to be involved, because this is a, you know, not just in your community, but statewide. All the wonderful things we talk about month after month that we're trying to do can't happen if we don't have qualified staff to support our people.
Dale, thank you, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I feel sometimes,
well,
too.
Well, I appreciate your bringing us up to date on the horrible situation.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is there additional citizen input or public participation? All right, seeing none, we'll move along, and I'll ask if there are any additions to the agenda. Are there any? Seeing none, we'll move right along then. Any CCDDB information? Phil is not here, so.
I don't know if Sue wants to say anything. We are not having a December meeting of the Developmental Disability Board. There will be a January meeting. And we've been trying to deal with the issue of having the of not having back-to-back meetings because of the problems that we have had, where we, you know, where one board meeting runs over in time. So we are looking at moving the times. It's been very difficult to get all five board members to come up with a time that works for everybody, and then find a time where this room is available. But I think we've done it at this point, and the next meeting will be January 20th at 12 noon. So, a noon meeting.
Now, our minutes from the last meeting. I'm amazed, Stephanie, that you were able to untangle them. Thank you for doing that. I mean, they really made sense. May I have a motion to approve? Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Susan. Any concerns, any adjustments, additions, corrections? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, the same? Or the, no, okay, the minutes are approved. My turn. I just have one thing to bring up here, and some of you know what it is. I'm very, very sad to let you know that Peter Tracy has resigned from the Mental Health Board as of the end of June. Phil Krein and I will be meeting together soon to talk about procedure for going ahead to search for a successor. Peter will stay with us these months to help us through the funding process. Thank goodness that he will stay with that. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. I'll get back to you all as soon as I can, as soon as Phil and I have been able to meet together and decide on our, we have a procedure that's in our intergovernmental agreement, and that will help us quite a bit. But there are things not mentioned in here, really. I mean, we have to have a strategy for posting and recruiting and that sort of thing. Peter's, as you know, is going to be very hard to replace. I won't say that. He's going to be darn hard to replace. And it may take us some time, unless we're extremely lucky, to find the right person. I'm sure there are plenty of very good and well-qualified people out there who would be interested in such a wonderful job. Wonderful? but we're going to be very careful. We're going to go at this in a thorough, and we're going to move it along, and we'll keep you, this board, apprised of where we are. Do you have questions? Mike, it's so... Yeah. You can, Mike, you can speak to us anytime you want.
Thank you. Good to see you all.
It's good to see you.
Turn it on.
Okay, Michael McClellan, longtime member of the Mental Health Board, although not involved as long as Nancy Crawford. I think almost all of you would have some idea of my enjoyment and my role on the board and my enjoyment in working with the staff and particularly with Peter. I was shocked, saddened, dismayed when I heard this news, which you've now all heard. I just would hope, now you say this is a good job, and right this moment, well, 6 months ago it was a great job. Right this moment, I don't know. It's kind of like trying to find a new coach for the Fighting Illini. That's a great job on paper, but the realities of the situation are such that it's very difficult to attract somebody who is willing to come in and trying to work with the powers that be. And I understand as of yesterday that with regard to the athletic director search, there's now a rogue group of trustees and others who are doing their own search. And I think that the conflict that you're going to encounter here is going to be similar to that, and it's a difficult situation to bring in a quality candidate, never mind make a quality hire. I would simply invite the people who, the hierarchy to reach back and remember what this board was like when we had members, when you had members who didn't think gay people should receive any benefit from the services that are provided by this board. And there have been a lot of other issues like that. That was just the most prominent that made headlines, and we've come so far. We have a director who has made a name for himself not only here, but statewide and nationwide. We, and by that I'll throw myself in there, we have created and brought in initiatives that are cutting edge, that are leaders in the country. And yet there, as I've observed for several months, and I think others of you have encountered along the way, there is an element now of I hate to keep using that word hierarchy, but I can't think of any other pleasant word to throw in there. I understand that the president of the College Democrats made a Facebook post with some choice terms, but I can't remember just what they are, and I'm not going to try to co-opt those, but the atmosphere that I have observed lately is not a healthy one. I don't see what benefit it will bring to our community. Reflecting on what Dale had to say for a minute, I recall not too many years ago when we had some large, well-attended rallies, both here and at what is now, I think, a private residence where the Y used to be. And I've been involved in some other things. Maybe I missed something, but I would like to see the community, our community, pull together and put some pressure on these people in Springfield they have money for people who don't, who aren't desperate, who aren't unable or disabled, and that's the people who need service the most. And that is a role that we can take, and Peter has been involved in those things. I'm still kind of shocked and frustrated, and I don't want to belabor all of this, but I really regret and resent the attitude that has come to persist that makes a Peter Tracy feel that he cannot continue his good service to this county, state, and nation. And Peter, if there's anything that you need or I can't even imagine. And I've talked to others about this today. We've discussed mass resignations of the board. Let the county board just come in and let them do the job. And that brings me back to the one point that I really wanted to stress, that I don't think people who are not directly involved with this have a real appreciation of what our director and staff do, of what we do as individuals acting on the board. They don't remember or don't know what it was like before. They have no reason, I guess, to fear what may come in the future. We have become or had become what when I was on the school board, and we got a lot of credit for it, although we didn't do the work, but when I went on the school board, all of a sudden, we had lighthouse schools all over the district, and that was built on work of people before us, but we got the credit. Well, we have a lighthouse district here. We have a leader, when I say district, the board and with regard to our consumers and the consumers of the developmental services, this is a tragedy. And I just urge you all to discuss this with others, try to get across the idea that we're on the slippery slope right now. We may be sliding backwards right to the old days, which were not, contrary to what some people believe, were not the good days, good old days. I would entertain any questions for, no. Mark, are you doing okay? I haven't seen you for a while. You're looking awful thin. It is wonderful to see you all, and I think I can honestly say that Stephanie has stuck it out longer as secretary than anybody in recent memory. And the staffers have been here. They're all wonderful. And I just am heartbroken may not be the right word, but very troubled by the situation that we're faced with right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
I think come Friday I may get to wear real shoes again.
I don't know. Many, many, many of us share your comments, your sadness, and your concern.
Well, first, Mike, thank you. That's I'm really touched, and I've gotten a lot of nice comments from a lot of people today, and they're very much appreciated. If you would have asked me when I started here in 2000 how long I would be in this position, at that time I was thinking, well, maybe 8 years, you know. It's been 16 years, you know, so it's been a pretty good run, and both of these boards have been wonderful boards to work with, and we've accomplished a lot of things. I'm not going to repeat. I think most of you have probably seen the email that I sent out announcing it. You know, we have made decisions that are based on principles, and we have used our money to support moving things in the right direction. And you know, I think that you know, I'm very proud of what we have done and what you've done. You know, couldn't happen without the people sitting around this table here. So thank you. I did want to mention one thing. I had a very nice conversation with Judy O'Connor yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, different things that we do, and she said something that, you know, kind of hit me because, you know, we were talking about who's eligible for services, and you made the comment that, you know, in order to be eligible for mental health services, you probably need to have a diagnosis from a psychologist or a psychiatrist or whatever. And I kind of wanted to remind everybody that if you think back, and again, this gets to where this board has done things based on principles. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but President Bush had the New Freedom Commission on mental health. And one of the findings related to youth services, and I think it was also related to the whole issue of violence and everything, had to do with the concept that we needed to move away from individualized services, and we needed to deliver services in a public health manner. That we have neighborhoods where there's violence and trauma, you know, and it gets to the whole thing of trauma, and that, you know, it's important for us to rethink how services are delivered, and that concept of a public health approach. Is, you know, I mean, if you know that 75% of the people that are in the jail, probably more, have behavioral health issues, including substance use disorders, you don't need a diagnosis. I mean, we know that that's a problem. You know, if you have neighborhoods where a lot of kids have experienced trauma, we know that that's a problem, and we have to address that. And I got to tell you, that's one of the things that the city of Champaign and all of our partners in this community with the Champaign Community Coalition under the leadership of Tracy Parsons, who's now a city employee, that is supposed to be a public health approach to how we deal with violence and youth violence and all the different issues that we're faced with. And so I just kind of, you know, really thank you, Judy, for pointing that out to me, because it really triggered the thought that, you know, we have new people on the board, and a lot of people haven't looked at the New Freedom Commission, which has fantastic recommendations, and that's really, I think, an important thing. So I just wanted to mention that, but also thank you, everybody. It's been an honor to be on this board and to work with all of you, and, you know, the next 6 months, I was asked to stay on until June 30th, so that I would we could deal with the transition, get a new person in place, and I actually do think this is a wonderful job, and I think that we will have a lot of great candidates, and we'll get somebody good to work and carry on and be part of this. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. This is hard, isn't it? It's real hard. Staff reports. Mark, did you want to make any comments about your very fine report?
I'll just take questions if there are any.
Okay. Are there any questions for Mark? Seeing none, we'll move along. Well written, well done. Oops. Sorry, Julian. I didn't see you. Yes. Sure.
Required to make the match?
Who's required?
Just us? Or other agencies? Or this is, I didn't quite get who's responsible for the match other than us?
Well, when the application was submitted, I believe we had a letter of support that indicated we would be providing match. And so we've made a commitment, or the first year of $20,000, and that was part of our allocation process. And I think you can, the expectation is that that's basically our contribution to the project, and that you can, you know, it's anticipated that we would have, as part of our allocation process next, this coming spring, the balance of the match being proposed. I don't know if there are other opportunities for in-kind match that might be provided, but that is a question that can be raised. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Mark? Lynn, would you like to highlight anything from your very fine report too?
I'd like to approach it the same way Mark did. If you have questions, I would be happy to answer.
Are there any questions for Lynn? Well, again, well written, all.
She got a nice picture in the paper.
Oh, she got her picture in the paper, and it was a wonderful picture. Yes, it was fine. I hope you all saw it. Did you? Didn't copy so well, no. But in the paper, it looked good. Is that the best picture you've ever had taken? Because it's really good. Clip it. Okay, very good. We can skip the consultant. A board-to-board reports. I invite them now. Agency information, this is the time to, Nancy, you have already told us the issues that you're confronting, that you're facing, and we appreciate that. Any other agency information? Seeing none, we'll move ahead. The financial information is in your packet. I hope you've had a chance to review it. Are there any questions that you have about it? Seeing none, let's see, I would like to invite a motion to accept this report.
I move.
Thank you, Dolores. Thank you. Thank you, Astrid. Any discussion? All those in favor of accepting this report, please say aye. Any opposed? Thank you. It is accepted. We need to look at pages 27 and 28. I hope you've had a chance to read it and think about it. And first of all, I invite a motion to approve it.
I move.
Thank you, Dolores. Thank you, Astrid. It's been moved and seconded.
Madam President, I would like to defer this motion until the next regular scheduled meeting of the Mental Health Board in January. I don't think that has been scheduled yet, so I can't have a date. January 20th? I hadn't seen the schedule yet.
Oh, can I ask? Oh.
So we have to deal with the...
We need to look at Robert's rules. I was about to ask you...
I think you have to get a vote to confirm that recommendation.
Yeah. I was about to ask you for rationale.
Well,
for doing
I think
that,
if
but
there's
I don't
a
know
second,
that.
I can do
second,
that.
Right?
We got a second.
We have a second. Astrid seconded it.
Okay.
Oh, no. No. The deferral needs a second, yes. Is there anyone who will second a deferral?
I will.
Thank you, Susan. Okay. We have to do a little homework.
Madam President, since I made the motion, I would like to address why I made
Please.
The motion.
Mm-hmm.
I considered it an out-of-cycle funding since we had our ad in the newspaper this last Sunday for our other agencies to apply for money from the Mental Health Board. I felt that this would be a proper way for this money to be allocated with a application to allow transparency with this money. Otherwise, we are allocating the money and we don't know what programs, what it's supporting. We're not going to have data to know that this money is being spent well in our community, and I think we need more discussion on that. I was at an executive meeting of the Community Coalition and learned a lot at that meeting, and the members who are at the table, who sat at the table, are all asked to put in $5,000. And I just don't know why we are asked to put in so much without this money being requested through a application. And those are my concerns.
Thank you, Judy. Discussion, please. Susan.
As you know, I came in last Friday to discuss a memo that I had written just to clarify the funding process. And we had a very good discussion, which I appreciated. But I think that, again, when we're given a memo to make a decision with a week's notice to consider the memo and then make the decision at the same board meeting, we really don't have much time to think through and talk about and discuss the decision. And the decision does involve $107,000. I know that it says it's income neutral, but that does, I think, still affect the amount of money that's available for the notice of application for funding. And it doesn't. Okay. Well, that's important to clarify. I think the other issue, though, is that it's going to an organization which has not laid out a plan for its use, and that we typically expect a plan for the use of money, and $107,000 is pretty substantial. Thank you.
Tom.
This is interesting to me that this memo for this money does not come as a surprise to me, as we've been talking about the sustainability plan for well over 2 years, and this was part of that sustainability plan. And to act like this is the first time that we've heard of it is not absolutely correct. And so I'm not in favor of delaying it one more minute.
Thank you, Tom. Any other? Astrid.
It's really not going to a different cause. It was going to the sustainability before, and it's going to the sustainability now. And the fact that Tracy jumped ship doesn't mean that the money should go somewhere else. I think it should still go to the same place.
Jump ship, indeed.
Are you pushed off?
Yeah.
So, two things. One is, I completely agree with the two previous speakers. This is not a surprise, and this supports programs that we have been deeply involved with for multiple years. But I wanted to clarify your request to defer to the next meeting, since I thought the rationale that you offered was that there should be a proposal that would be considered as a part of our regular cycle, which would seem to me what you don't want. You won't be satisfied next meeting either. You'll want to have it pushed off until, I don't know, when do we finish here? And sometime in the spring. So this would delay, if I'm not mistaken, this would delay our ability to act on it if we're going to require such a proposal. Am I incorrect about that?
Judy.
Mm-hmm. All I'm asking is that we have more transparency about this proposal or the money transfer, the release of the money. When the coalition was set up, it was, as I have read, was to be Champaign County Coalition, and the people who are at the table now are Champaign-Urbana agencies with some county agencies, which is appropriate because it is for juvenile justice. But there are no Champaign County people. Tracy is no longer an employee of the mental health board. It is a Champaign-driven agency, and I just feel that we are asked to contribute way more than is appropriate when we have agencies who we need to consider funding in the future that could benefit the coalition.
Can I?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify what you're after here. It's not actually a deferral. There, I don't see any point in a deferral for a month since we're not going to be able to either agree or disagree about that a month from now, because we already know quite a bit about this program because we've been talking about it here for multiple years, including all of the activities that are listed in this memo that we, as a board, had decided we were a part of our sustainability plan, and the fact that other units of government and agencies are involved in it, that's a positive. That's what we wanted to happen. So anyway, my main question, though, is it sounded to me like you don't actually want a deferral, or if you do want a deferral, you want a deferral until the go through the next round of proposals. I'm just trying to clarify what we're discussing here.
I asked Judy. For a deferral till the next mental health board meeting.
May Dolores, please.
I called for the question.
All in favor of calling the question? I think we have to vote on that. Any opposed to calling the question? Okay. The question has been called. All in favor of Judy's proposal to defer action on this motion. It's a voice vote at this point, yes. All in favor of deferring action on this thing? You can, what? It's an, I'm sorry, all those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, the same. The deferral is defeated. Thank you, Judy, all the same. Okay, now I see that Tracy is here, and I would like to invite him to talk about this a bit.
So thanks, Deb, and the board for the opportunity to come and give an update. I probably can answer a couple of the questions that Judy was asking. And so, let me say that, you know, I think my heart is really heavy today, as Pete informed me this morning about his resignation. I was a little late because I just left a retirement ceremony for a gentleman on campus at the university that's been there for about 25 years. And one of his main responsibilities at the university was implementing the diversity supplier program on campus. And, you know, as he said to me, Tracy, 20 years ago when we were talking about how do we improve minority contractors' opportunities on campus. We've got a long way to go, but we've made a lot of progress. And I think about Pete's retirement in the same vein. There are very few leaders and organizations in this community that have been willing to openly take on the issue of addressing our disparities, disproportionality for minority youth and all of our systems and all of the negative areas that are dramatically impacting the quality of life and health for our families, our neighborhoods, and our community. And Pete has been in the forefront of this leadership, and I'm concerned, you know, that we are losing one of a very few champions for this issue. And when we came on board here as an access team, I was pleasantly surprised, as that was my first opportunity to really work with Pete and begin to understand the depths of his knowledge and understanding about these issues, his understanding of health-related activities for minority youth, and to learn, you know, what had taken place 6, 7, 8 years before our arrival, laying the groundwork for where we are right now. It really is a testament to his leadership and this board's role in our community on addressing this really tough issue. So as we talk about the coalition today, the coalition would not be in existence if it wasn't for the Mental Health Board. It wouldn't be in existence for Peter Tracy's leadership. And I think it's sad. It's sad as a community that that the destructive forces for our work have had a very prominent place over the last year. And, you know, I'm not as bound by saying what I want to say as I've been as a staff person here. And it's really disheartening as a person who, again, has worked in for 20 plus years in this community, trying to make the issues of minority youth, Black kids specifically, and their families relevant in our community. And so the coalition. So we've just finished a mini retreat a couple of weeks ago where we've finally solidified the organizational structural types of things that we've been working on for the last year. And so all of the partners, so we have, including Rantoul now, I'm excited to say we've got Rantoul at the table with us. So we've got city governments from Champaign-Urbana, Rantoul. We have law enforcement from Champaign-Urbana, U of I, the county. We have education from Champaign-Urbana and Rantoul. We have, those are the main system partner, park districts, I'm sorry, from all three communities as well. And so the work we've, and public health, yes, and United Way. And so, and state's attorney's office, right? And so the work that we've gone through to help put this infrastructure in place has not been easy. And to the fact that, so everyone is on board to contribute. So as Judy talked about, each one of the partners are contributing $5,000 as membership dues. I think that's how we're going to end up classifying this. So the county is on board. I just approved and sent out from the sheriff's office and the state's attorney's office resources to support the coalition, as well as the county itself. The city of Champaign's contribution is $120,000, which really covers my salary and the additional staff support through the city, as well as the additional supports for the work that they've taken for the last 3 or 4 years. So the city is assuming and taking on the leadership as we had hoped the leadership would
be housed here, right? And so, so that it would have been, wouldn't be a city-led initiative, but of course we were denied that opportunity. So the Mental Health Board's contribution of $107,000 would be in grants. It would be in grants. So it's not for the operational support for the coalition. All the other partners are covering that, Judy. So the Mental Health Board money would be for the community, for agencies, because the coalition doesn't do programs. So many of the agencies that the Mental Health Board funds are participants in receiving the resources. And there are more importantly, because we, you know, these traditional organizations have gotten all the resources through the years, right? So the fact that we're putting money into small organizations, into grassroots organizations, into minority organizations, and getting them included in solving the problems in our community is critical. It's critical. And so the flexibility that we were able to have, because we were able to use Access and Mental Health Board money last summer, we learned such a valuable lesson. So what I've given you, the document with the red print, is the 2015 priorities for the Community Coalition. And so as our increase in violence started early in the year to be a crisis, we really realized that going into the summer, it was critical that we found and identified as many ways to get youth into constructive activities. Get as many of those kids off the streets, in things where they were supervised, connected to stuff, because we know idle time, idle minds leads to trouble, right? We know that. And so our impact from the Mental Health Board and Access this past summer, in my 20 plus years, there's never been anything like that to be able to respond to community needs. And so the documents you have in front of you are the kind of projects that we were able to fund going into the summer. So you can read that at your leisure. I'm not going to go through each one of them, but I did want to highlight a couple of the things because I think it's really, really critical that you understand the impact that we were able to have. And so the fact that we were able to connect with almost 900 kids this summer, you know, we were experiencing unprecedented levels of shooting violence in our community. As of last Wednesday, we passed the 105 shooting mark. Now, we know that we've had, if you're mistaken, Shake, we know that we've had some recent shootings since then. So we've had 12 murders and over 105 shootings in our community since February. And so the ability to think out of the box and figure out how we respond to this is critical. So I know you have your traditional systems and structures and how you've worked to fund traditional organizations. It's great. You know, you've put a lot of money in a lot of good organizations over the years, but in today's world, I would ask you to think about how you become more creative with the resources. And so the request to support the coalition's work, it really is important. So what I wanted to highlight, just really a couple of important things here. So for the first time, we were able to fund summer jobs. I mentioned that to you before, in Urbana. You know, we had 35 young people learn about the world of work. That really is critical for youth development. The program I've been talking the most about over the last couple of weeks is we took 18 African-American middle school boys who are the highest flyers around discipline, truancy, suspensions over the previous year. And we were able to bring them in for a special program this summer that we funded here through the Mental Health Board and Access for leadership development, development for them, So I was at the school board meeting a couple of weeks ago. So this time last year, this group of boys had 267 discipline referrals as a group. 267. As of 2 weeks ago, that number was 47. So when you talk about impact, when you talk about the need to catch folks who have the ability to go the wrong direction very easily, they're struggling, home life is difficult, complex, and we were able to touch them this summer. School district has hired and put to keep with these boys a full-time staff person. And these boys are doing phenomenal. We had midnight basketball program where we have on Friday nights anywhere from 75 to 100 boys off the streets in the gyms at the Salvation Army. The park districts are on board with this. Next summer, we're going to have Urbana here, Brookings, with Urbana Park District opening up the gyms to get the boys off the streets in something constructive. These resources would probably support something like that. Last week at the Yale basketball game at the University of Illinois, these boys played at halftime. And to see the pride these boys on campus, a place that they have not been, are not as welcomed as we'd want them to be. So we are having direct impact with a population of folks that's not normally connected. In your packet, I gave you something about CU Neighborhood Champions. I'm sorry I'm taking so long with all of this, but I think it's important. And so CU Neighborhood Champions came out of our coalition meetings, whereas we were having all of these conversations about traumatic impact in these neighborhoods where these shootings are taking place, kids can't ride their bike, you can't sit on your porch, you know, I've said in a number of different spaces, the turning point for me was I saw someone that I grew up with in high school. She was on the news talking about being in her house, playing with her grandson as bullets started flying in her neighborhood. What happens in these neighborhoods as these shootings are taking place? Who's providing support for them? Who's there? Where are their crisis response? Where are their trauma response? Where is that happening? And it's not. And the real tragedy is that these neighborhoods started to normalize this stuff, right? So they say, oh, we had a shooting last week. You want to go play ball? Oh, you know, let's go to the store. I mean, and we have to disrupt that. We can't let folks think that this should be the way they live their lives. So the CU Neighborhood Champions are a group of, first of all, it's being put together by agency folks from DCFS, Cunningham, my former access staff, other community organizations have come together to put this project together. It didn't cost any money. Folks are volunteering their time to organize this. And you go into the neighborhoods and you identify those folks who are known in the neighborhoods, those folks who Ms. Johnson down on the corner that everybody knows, she sits and knows everything that's going on in the neighborhood, empowering her to be that trauma response person. Empowering neighborhoods to empower themselves, right? Powerful stuff coming out of the coalition. So resources will be to help support something like that. We've got our training coming up in February for that initiative. And then the final piece I have in here that I wanted you to see is we did focus groups over the summer for 18 to 26-year-olds. And that is a huge gap in our community of services and supports, and these are the ones who are causing the most trouble and issues. And so we'd met with them. It was not easy to get them in to talk and tell us what was going on and what their needs were. We were able to do that through the coalition as well. And so I included that in here so you could just see that information. So there's much, much more going on. I mean, you're hearing about don't shoot as an approach. You've heard about racial taboo. There's a number of things going on in the coalition that are just really powerful and very positive. And having the resources to support these response initiatives really is critical. So I would ask you to support And thank you for the support and continuing to support the sustainability stuff for the coalition.
Thank you very much, Tracy. Sue, did you want to?
Yeah, I just want to make a couple of comments and ask a question. One is, Tracy, I can't thank you enough for what you've done in our community. I know how dangerous it is around Holly Hill and Hedge because I have friends that live there, and I had a son who lived there. So I am absolutely in support of the sustainability. What has become unclear to me is that when we get a memo such as the one that we got for this meeting to move $107,000, we don't have a list of how the $107,000 might be spent. And I agree with sustainability, but in some ways, the Champaign City helped to sustain the Access Initiative by paying for Tracy's salary. I don't object that more money goes into the sustainability because we made a commitment when we got the grant, but it's being clear about how the money is spent that I would like to, you know, put the focus on. And if the money is being spent, I see $194,000 or approximately $195,000 in how some of the money was spent last year. Well, that provides a context perhaps for the $107,000. It's one of the reasons why I wanted more time for us to consider the decision memo, because it really was not very fulsome. It didn't have much information about what would happen. And I think that's what's really important for this board, for everybody to feel well-informed and to understand what it is that we're voting on. So this is much more informative than the two-page decision memo. And I will also still say that if we vote to support the $107,000 transfer to the Don Moyers Boys Club to do things like this, then I would hope that a year from now they would come back through the notice of funding applications and put in a request for funding like this so that we do expand to grassroots organizations and we do have a transparent way of funding them, because sustainability has to be long-term and it's also got to be transparent. It can't just be a permanent transfer of $107,000 from the Mental Health Board if it's not for salaries. So I would hope that because we know that we're facing crises in all of our agencies right now and that the requests from all of our agencies are likely to go up if the state doesn't come through, that we continue to focus on transparency, which Tracy has really provided for me today through this memo that I didn't have with the two-page memo, and that, you know, we're all trying to do our job and trying to do it as well as we can with whatever information we can get. So I appreciate this.
Yeah, thanks.
Much.
And I hope it's okay. But one of the things, because of the way we were planning, was disrupted. Mm-hmm. We are still reacting and responding to that. And so that is part of, you know, what we're still evolving into. Again, we had put a plan in place that we were working towards. So that's all changed. So I just wanted to add that as well.
Well, I do apologize that the memo wasn't clear. I tried to list as many things as they did last year and how many kids were served, but my problem was that this is, you know, we talk about trying to move away from siloed agencies to, you know, to collaborations, and the what I maybe didn't make clear enough in this memo was that the idea here was that we were going to have a collaboration, make some decisions, and I don't know what those decisions are yet. At this point, as you can see, they spent more money last year than our $107,000. So I think that, you know, the job of the coalition is going to be to make recommendations for how that $107,000 is going to be spent. And remember, that includes all of those folks, including, you know, the state's attorney and all the folks sitting around the table. We have to decide how best we can use the 107 and any other resources we have. You know, and so, you know, I can make some guesses. Maybe it'll be summer youth employment. Maybe it'll be midnight basketball. But, you know, it's, I think that what we're doing here is trying to support a coalition, move away from siloed agencies, and, you know, so at this point, we just don't know what they're, you know, what is going to happen. But I trust the coalition.
I just want to add, in all fairness to the staff and the other members of the board, I realize that you're relatively newer, but this is not a naively offered proposal. All of these things have been discussed multiple occasions over a period of years, including written material that the board has gotten, including during the period of time when you've been on the board. So it might be complicated in that it's because of the nature of the work, it's, you have to sort of put a lot of different pieces together, but this is not new. It is not coming out of the blue, and it's not mysterious. I'm really at a loss to understand why it feels so mysterious.
It's not mysterious to me about the coalition. I agree with Susan that what Tracy has done is phenomenal. I just don't think there's transparency with the money, and as taxpayers' money, I think we owe it to them.
That's what I find odd, that you think that this is not transparent.
I'd like to call in somebody else, Julian, please, if I may. Tom?
Hey, I bet Tracy can correct me if I'm wrong. I bet I know more about Tracy's work than anybody else in this room, even Shonda, who's worked closely with him for the last year. I knew Tracy when he first came to town and the work that he's done. So as a historian about what needs to be done in this town, what has been done, what hasn't been done, what's been tried and not worked, we don't have anyone else around here who's better than that, than Tracy. If he tells me that prior to his work with Pete, this stuff wasn't being done, he's right. It hasn't been done. And the fact that it is new and we want to try different kinds of interventions, he's right about that. And what those interventions are, we may not know. For those of you who weren't here when we got the access grant, which took 3 years, by the way, Peter, to get. It didn't just fall out of the sky into our lap. It took 3 years to get. And when we did get it, that grant, even though it was for 6 years, it was like a seed grant to develop infrastructure to do the kinds of things that Tracy has been doing over the last 9 years. And he's been able to do that with the help of Peter. I've known Peter maybe even longer than I've known Tracy. And Peter's attempt has always been, how do we serve this community? And he's always tried to serve it in a very new and different way, in a way that actually works for people. If you listen, just listen to what Tracy was saying and how he said it, and you listen to his voice, you hear the concern that he has for the work that he's doing and for the future of this work. We are at a crisis, folks. And yes, our job is to make sure that we spend people's money wisely. But we always want to spend it wisely when it comes to minority folks, and particularly African Americans. We don't have the same concern about spending it wisely when it's someone else. Tracy and Peter have given us a great opportunity here, and it's one that I particularly want to make sure that it continues. If we don't do this, you're going to be very sad about what this community looks like if we fail to follow through with this. And we have to follow through with it, not just this year and next year, but we have to make sure that we care about these people in this community who no one else cares about. And Peter has brought that home to us on the time that I've been on the board. I know what mental health services were like before that, and I know that they're far better now than what they ever been. And it exceeds anybody's vision of what mental health would have been like in this community. I thank Tracy for the work that he's done, and I thank Peter for being a visionary, for seeing that we wanted to get somewhere with the quality of life in this community, that Tracy was the kind of person to do it.
I know that. It's okay. But thank you. Astrid.
I'm probably the oldest one here. And I remember in Chicago when the white men said, we've got to do something, we've got to help those people. And we got Cabrini Green. And I think a new generation like the Tracys, who are shifting to evidence-based policies and things that work and things that come out of the black community instead of down from whitey, I think it's made a huge difference. And I think it's the way to go. And I think we need to fund it.
Thank you. Are we ready to vote?
Yeah.
Are we called?
It's a roll call.
It's a roll call because it's money. Stephanie, would you call the roll, please? On the motion to approve the redirection, et cetera.
Astrid Bergson?
Yes.
Ilan Danovy?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Dolores Henry?
Yes.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Deborah Townsend?
Yes. This motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Now we will move to what looks like old business. Or is it new? No, old business. Okay. Did you want to take this up?
Basically, this is an item that we have put on the agenda about six times, and it seems like we defer it every time, and we wanted to give adequate time to talk about it. And Susan Fowler, we included the note that you wrote, and we're passing out. We actually had a very good discussion. Deborah Townsend, Susan Fowler, and I met last Friday, and what you're receiving here are my kind of written responses to different things. And what I thought we could do is just kind of walk through. You know, you write a lot of stuff, you know, and I tried to pick out the things and. Obviously, one of the things that was discussed, is that okay to go through it this way?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Can I just make a comment about my intention?
Yeah.
So my intention in writing this was not to criticize the board or to embarrass anyone on the board. It was just to say, as a member who's been on the board for now almost 2 years, I've had enough time to recognize what I don't know and what's not clear. And so it was very helpful for me to put into writing what were my points of confusion. And so I did appreciate the opportunity to sit and talk. And I think, you know, we do have people who've been on the board for 15 years or more, and we're in different positions when there's that span of time, 8 years, whatever. So that is the intention behind writing the memo and the questions that I've asked over the last 6 months.
Yep. Well, they were great questions. And I'm glad that we're able to talk about it now. One of the points that you raised was the issue of parliamentary procedure and following Robert's rules. And you passed out the cheat sheet, and I think we put that in there. For the most part, when you think back over the years, we've only had a few meetings where we've gotten ourselves tied into knots, and there are good exit strategies for doing that. One of them is when you get the motions that have the amendments, friendly amendments or whatever, When you get it all twisted up, someone can say, I withdraw the motion, let's start all over again. You know, is one opportunity. But one of the things that my response was, I agree with Susan. We do need to, you know, we can't have chaos. But I also wanted to kind of point out that historically, this board and the Developmental Disabilities Board had kind of made a choice that we did not want to operate in an intimidating way that would be difficult for people with disabilities or family members to come here. We wanted it to be sort of friendly to those folks. And so in some ways, I don't think that, at least I'm giving my impression of what the board said, we really don't want to be the county board or the city council and have that totally formal approach that is intimidating. We wanted it to be a friendly and encouraging place for families and people with disabilities to show up. And so that was one of the, you know, that's to, you know, if we are loose, I think we have that philosophical reason for being loose. And that said, you know, I think we have to strike a balance. We want to be friendly, but we also don't want chaos. And that was my response to Susan. And I don't know if anybody has anything they want to comment on parliamentary procedure or whatever at this point. I do have a funny story. When I was in college, I was in a fraternity. And at that time, I really wanted to be president of the fraternity so that I could use it on my resume. And so the second semester of my senior year, I lost the election. And as a reward, they gave me parliamentarian. So I read Robert's Rules of Order from cover to cover. And in, you know, sort of in retaliation, I began to call points of order and do all this stuff until they finally just ignored me. you know, I guess my point is we do need to strike a balance, and I don't know if anybody has anything else they want to say about parliamentary procedure and the Mental Health Board at this point.
Okay, very good. Okay.
The other thing that was mentioned was the possibility of using a consent agenda. As you know, the county board does that, and it does speed things along. And the consent agenda, you know, I guess you were thinking, Susan, that they could include things like the staff reports and some of the other business that's more kind of a routine business. And I think that is clearly something that the board should look at. And, you know, if directed, staff will, you know, we can organize things that way. As a matter of fact, we put the agenda together by meeting with the presidents of the boards, and we will have new officers next time. You know, you're not running, you said. Well, I think your time is up at this point.
No, it's not.
Well,
my time is not up.
Their time is not up. Whatever, whoever the president is, we meet with the president, and I think that's something we can talk with, you know, about adding consent agendas. Any comments about consent agendas, anybody?
I have a comment. Yeah. I would think that we would do a consent agenda on a limited basis, because one of the things that make the Mental Health Board successful, in my opinion, is giving people opportunities to have a full discussion around the issues. And I just hate when organizations just have important issues kind of packed under a consent agenda, and people really have to take it all or none, unless you go through a process to pull it out.
You can pull it out.
I know. So that's the only reason that I'm against it.
Yeah,
it doesn't open
thank
enough
you
discussion.
To us. Yeah.
Thanks.
That's a good point, well taken, yes. And we don't want to get into that situation. Astrid.
In support of her point, the consent agenda at the county board is the things that have been approved unanimously in the committee. So they have been discussed and approved unanimously. So we aren't in that position at all. There is nothing. The consent agenda wouldn't be things that had been previously consented to. So it would be a very different thing from the board.
Thanks. That helps us to understand how it might work well.
Or not.
Yeah. Julian.
Well, I was just trying to anticipate what might be in the consent agenda for this group. And Peter happened just offhandedly to say staff reports. Well, I often find those staff reports raise questions that I want to ask.
That can
so I'd be unhappy if that was on a consent agenda, even though I don't complain about their reports. I think they're excellent, but I find it useful to use them as a way to understand better what's going on.
I think that a consent agenda could be structured so that questions can still be discussed. Is that not right?
No.
You can't.
No.
Oh.
You can pull issues out of the agenda.
I would think. Yeah. Tom.
Just with regards to the consent agenda, I was on a board that had consent. I was on a board that had a consent agenda.
Which
and,
one was that?
And this one, I like, if we're talking simply about staff reports, I like it because it does what Peter says about the kind of atmosphere that it creates for the board. I also like it because both Mark and Lynn do a lot of work in preparing those, and I like giving them the opportunity to do what they did today or to elaborate on them, because I think that it's too often that staff just get overlooked, and this is just one minor thing. There might be other things we put in a consent agenda, but I sure like them having, I want us to be able to appreciate the work to do as much as possible. And if this is one way to do it, maybe there are other ways to do it, then I think I'd like to keep that opportunity, actually.
Okay, so I don't think we have to make a decision on this today, but let's keep it in the air, so to speak, and we can try it out or not as we decide later. And do you want to say something about?
Well, we have. I was just going to, just to mention on the out-of-cycle thing.
I don't even see
words. Oh, it's part of, it was part of one of the community, it's under communication. Still
under this one.
You know, basically what I pointed out in, you know, in this, in the memo that Susan referred to that was November 19th, we say in there that we give ourselves a caveat, and it says, out-of-cycle requests will not be considered unless planned and initiated by the mental health board, and you know, which means that you have the prerogative. There's nothing in the statute that limits when you can make decisions about things. I kind of went through the list of all of the things that Susan had on the list, and frankly, the only thing I thought of that was actually, maybe there was more than one, but the promised health care request related to psychiatric last. Now, that really is an out-of-cycle request because it really will impact on the amount of money that's available for the next cycle. And, you know, so that, and that was brought to you. I mean, we have, you know, we brought that because of the nature of the issue, that it was an emergency. I had two providers. I mean, Sheila Ferguson came, you know, said that this was something that was needed to help with, that we have 1,200 people that were receiving services. So I mean, I think this was sort of an unusual situation, but that really is the major out-of-cycle request that we dealt with. I don't know, Susan, did you want to talk about any of the other items on here?
Well, you helped clarify that the Mental Health Board has its operating funds, which are separate from the notice for funding application. That was helpful because it wasn't clear to me why we were voting on issues like space when they seem to be operating fund issues. And then my last suggestion was to, when new items are added to the agenda at the time of the meeting, to use them for discussion and information only to allow us time to consider them and to vote at the next meeting. And I think we had new items last month, and that led to some chaos.
I mean, we did solve it. We did vote, but there were a lot of back and forth, and so.
Thanks, Susan.
They were simply suggestions.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I just had a question for Susan. On your item number 6, you wanted clarification regarding a relationship between the Mental Health Board and the County Commission.
We did discuss that in our meeting on Friday. Peter might want to discuss it again.
I'd like to hear why you raised that as an issue.
I raised it as an issue because the Mental Health Board does have some reporting responsibilities to the County Board, and it's clear that there's been some discomfort between the two boards, and I wasn't certain what the basis was and wanted to bring it out in the open instead of talking about it and skirt the issues.
Okay.
And the answer, my answer is written there. I say I agree it would be better to have a good relationship with the County Board. And then I pointed out that historically, since 2000, we have had a good relationship with the County Board up until recently. And in my opinion, this is an anomaly. But I do think we need to try to work with the board and to the extent that we can. I mean, who wants to be fighting with another board? We're supposed to be on the same team.
Right. Thank you.
Well, I don't know if maybe it's not a good time to say it. It's just that whole issue also is not mysterious. I mean, it's related to the things that we've just talked about. That, you know, it's very difficult if you have a philosophical issue, and as a mental health board, what you're trying to do is operate in a way that's that it has a concern for the fact, in order to provide some sort of competent service to the African American community, you have to be able to do things and see the world in a way that's not just quite so bureaucratic or regimented without being irresponsible. I have no question about we need to be responsible about it. But when you end up, I mean, I think the issue here has to do with some sort of deep-seated values and political disagreements. And I think that's why Peter is in the situation he's in now. And I think it's tragic.
So you're suggesting Peter's been forced to resign, or that it was a choice to resign? This is some of the undercurrent that I wish that we would clarify.
Would you like to speak to that, Peter?
Well, I wouldn't want to say, if you're asking, if you're asking me, I don't have an answer to what's in Peter's mind. I just think the situation that's been created, which has completely disrespected and refused to acknowledge any alternative point of view about how we relate as a county and as a mental health board to the African American community. I think Peter's been a central figure in that. So, but I'll let he should speak for himself if he may not want to say anything about that now.
Well, I tried to, in my note, just to, I tried to identify the things that I thought were important. And frankly, the last 4 or 5 years have been much more difficult, the last year especially. I feel like I, to some degree, have become the focal point of the target, if you will. And that is distracting, I think, from the good work that this board does. And, you know, I've also been here 16 years. Maybe it's time for me to get off the board at this point. But frankly, the difficulty and the struggles, you know, I feel like I've been distracted from trying to do, I focus more on defending what we do than doing what we should be doing. So that's pretty much it.
Any other discussion on this topic? Then let's move ahead to our, not our final topic, but almost. The briefing memorandum, page 38 and 39. Peter, would you mind presenting this?
Yeah. This gets back to the conversation we had at the last meeting, which I was not able to hear because that phone system doesn't work very well. It was an issue. I had a long discussion with Julian about this prior to the meeting, and Julian, what I tried to do was, instead of just talking, making it about psychiatric services, I made it about what is appropriate uses of our funding, because we have a number of situations where we have been asked for money that really was to make up for systems that are broken around us, systems where other agencies or other organizations have a fiscal responsibility. You know, we've talked about, you know, some of the services that we fund at Head Start, for example. The reason that we fund those is because the program that's supposed to be dealing with that from the school isn't responsive to the needs of the families that are in Head Start. And so do we say, you know, the situation we were in at that point is, do we say, well, no, that's the school's responsibility? Or do we say, yeah, let's go ahead and fund it because whatever is there is not working? And so the issue here, you know, that's one example. I mean, the Medicaid example, Medicaid is responsible for the full rate. We've talked about the supplementation issue. And basically, here we have another situation. The state has been historically responsible for psychiatric services. And in this situation, the state pulled the pin on the psychiatric leadership program, which was the only grant that made that system even remotely viable, and they took it away. Community Elements is then put in a position where they're losing $60,000 to $70,000 a month. They then scramble to try to figure out a way to make sure their clients are taken care of, and we're in the same position. Do we say no? That's the state's responsibility. Or, you know, as a policy, do we, you know, as our policy, that's the state's responsibility, they should be funding it. Or do we say the state isn't doing it, and we have 1,200 people, you know. And so the bottom line in my memo is, you know, I kind of, you know, we have all these conflicting issues, and I think it's one of those things that we're going to have to take on a case-by-case basis. I think it's very difficult to come up with policy. I mean, if we came up with a policy about psychiatric at this point, whether we should fund psychiatric, you know, it's hard to do it outside of the context of what Nancy and Sheila have presented to us. And so that's what, and so we've had that conversation. And then, you know, with that, if you go to the second page of the memo, there were five items there. And these were items that Julian and I talked about. And, you know, Nancy disputed some of those things in there. But the reality is that, you know, at least the way I understood Affordable Care Act and the parity issue or the parity requirements that CMS is having is that theoretically everybody should get served. Unfortunately, what's theoretically possible or we think theoretically isn't necessarily what happens. And so, Nancy, thank you for enlightening us on that, you know, and it makes the point. We have another system that's supposed to be taking care of healthcare but doesn't do it. And so you then have FQHCs that are in the position where they have to deal with it, and then it becomes: do we want to support it or not? And so that's kind of what the memo says. I mean, it basically says, you know, I think that we have to look at these on a case-by-case basis and make our decisions. You know, you are the board, and you have to make the decisions of what you think is in the best interest of Champaign County. And discussion.
I just want to point out that this briefing memo from Peter is an absolutely wonderful example of the kind of leader that he's been. He spent considerable amount of time talking to me about this. I don't even think you were in town when we did. I think it was a phone conversation and you were out of town. But his thinking helps clarify my thinking. And it's absolutely wonderful to have a resource person like this. So the reason that I asked for the amendment to our funding, that particular request, and said that we should make sure that we're not committing ourselves to this in a continuous fashion is because, exactly because I have the same kind of concerns that Susan has about conversation and understanding. And now we have some time to talk about. And Peter has framed for us here many of the issues that I think we need to put on our agenda and have time to discuss. And we should talk about them as concretely as possible. I agree, we have to do it on a case-by-case rather than a single policy way. But I hope we don't just, wait until we get another request and then try and decide that on that day. Yet it's somewhat difficult for people like us, even though I've spent my whole career as a mental health researcher, I have not spent it as an administrator. And there are many issues that are very complicated in terms of administration that we need that kind of advice on. So I'm going to miss Peter. That's maybe my bottom line here. But
Julian, you've called for discussion, and we all would like to do that. Do you have a proposal for how we might manage that? We have another meeting in, we have a meeting in January. But real discussion, we've had some good discussion here tonight, and I'm grateful for that. Whoop, it's Wanda probably. No. but what should we do? I mean, how would you suggest we go about this? It's a good idea. We need to do it. If you don't, that's okay.
Well, I mean, there's two ways that we can have a discussion. One is we can put it on our formal agenda, and we could allot a certain amount of time to it. But not one time. Maybe it requires some sort more of ongoing conversation. Mm-hmm. Or we could do what we've, we can have a study session? Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Where we can just talk and think and converse with one another? And,
yes, we could do either of those, or
so
both.
Whatever mm-hmm. seems appropriate.
Okay. Any other comments? Well, thank you. Let's talk about that. You're not gone yet. Are there any board announcements? No. All right. Motion to adjourn? Thank
Second.
You. Second?
Third.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you for a very good meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll notice that I took your memo seriously.